Shri Ramakrishna, Shri Ramakrishna, Mama said yesterday. What did she have to say?
The last one or the last one?
The last.
The mind is always on Krishna's feet.
Right, the mind is always on Krishna and she was touching Krishna's feet. So now, speaking? Lakshmana. Now this is the only queen whose story of marrying Krishna was not told earlier in detail. Remember there was a chapter earlier, Krishna married 5 queens? So there she was just mentioned briefly. And all the other queen stories were mentioned in depth. So here those stories are mentioned briefly, and Lakshmana is now mentioned in depth. So I'm going to divide the story to today and tomorrow. We'll do half the story today and half the story tomorrow. Okay, now, keeping in mind that Bhagavan said that she was always absorbed, right? Krishnaya, Bhagavan, her consciousness was always absorbed in Krishna. So now Bhagavan is saying, Mama Api. Mama Api. What does Mama mean? Me? Api? Also, Mama Api. So that's also true for me. And then, Rajni. Well, Achyuta Janma Karma. Who's Achyuta? Janma Karma is?
Activity.
Activity, huh? And birth. What verse does that remind us of? Yeah, exactly. Okay. Then we have Shrutva. What is Shrutva? Here. Narada. Me, Gita,
songs,
Chita, heart, consciousness, mind, if you have your state, Mukunda, one consideration, one has a nice smell on the face, like a Mukunda song. Okay, what other words do you hear? Padma? No, that's Pada. Lotus flower. And do you know what Hasta is? Hand. So, Asaya, Pada Asaya, one who holds a lotus in your hand. And that, by the way, is named for Lakshmi. And Loga? Sri Lakshmana Devasha.
Sri Lakshmana
said, Mama. Mind, puppy, also, Rajni, Ogni. Is this the queen? No. Draupadi, right. Achyuta, of Lord Krishna. Janma, about the birth. Karma, an activity. Shukra, hearing. Move, repeatedly. What is she hearing? Narada, by Narayani, Gita, chanted, Asaha, came, Chitta, my heart, Mukunde, fixed upon Mukunda, Kila, indeed, Padma of Praya, by the Supreme Goddess of Fortune who holds the lotus in her hand. Vikraha, chosen, Sue, referee, Samrishya, considering, Ihaya, projecting, Loka, of time, on, the rulers. Okay, any idea what she's saying here? The verse is called. Alright, I'll have a good teaching up. Sri Lakshmana said, O Queen, I repeatedly heard Narada Muni glorify the appearances and activities of Achyuta, and thus my heart also became attached to that Lord of Kunda. Indeed, even Goddess Padmahasta chose him as her husband after careful consideration, rejecting the great demigods who rule various. When did that happen? When did the Goddess of Fortune really carefully consider and choose the Lord as her husband, rejecting the rulers of various planets? She was going through all of the different rulers of all the planets and saying, This one's got this nice thing, but this problem. And this one has this nice thing, but he's got this problem. And this one has this nice thing, but he's got this problem. So I choose Lord Vishnu. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is before this one from the Dharma, before the marriage?
Yes, yes. But what pastime is it connected with? Well, that's an awfully good guess, but the goddess unfortunately doesn't show up here. She tries, but she doesn't make it in. Yes, very good. Got it. Very nice. So, yes, she comes out of the ocean of milk, and who is churning? The demons and the demigods, right? So they're all the demigods, and all the lokapanas are there. Do you think the demigods are pretty attractive, the husbands? What do you think? Yeah, definitely. And if you were to see the sun god, the moon god walk in here, you know, we might think that they were gods. That happens to people. They'll see some deva and they start worshiping them as gods. So they're certainly very attractive. I mean, what any lady would refuse to marry Chandra or Surya or Indra? But the goddess of fortune, she said no. And she didn't say no sentimentally, she said in her own house. Samrishya, Su Samrishya, very carefully considering, very carefully considering. Prabhupada says that blind following is condemned. So our faith should be based on careful consideration, not the sentimentality. We should have reasons for our faith. Prabhupada gives the example of the cobbler who was told by Narayana that the Lord was, what did he say the Lord Narayana was doing?
Treading
an elephant through the eye of the needle, and the cobbler just starts dancing. That's wonderful. And Narada says, why do you believe me? What was his answer? Yes, you can put a big plant inside of a little seed. A little plant seed, you see big banyan trees. I don't think you have them. Do you have them in Melbourne? You have them in Brisbane, at least. Big banyan trees. And they're coming from this little seed. So if you can put a big tree in a little seed, why can't you put an elephant through the eye of a needle? So Prabhupada says that the devotee's faith is not blind. It's based on careful consideration. It's based on logic and reason. Maybe we should not do anything blindly. Of course, Krishna consciousness is so nice that even if you take your sadhana or chant Hare Krishna blindly, you still get some benefit. But Krishna's recommending to do the sacrifice in knowledge. To do our activity with careful consideration. Alright, and the other really important thing to consider here as we go through this story is that Lakshmana also is the same as Sri Bhadra. Sri Lakshmana also, she's saying this Chitana, that she's keeping Mukunda in her consciousness. Her consciousness is fixed on Mukunda. How did it become fixed on Mukunda? How did she do that? People always have a problem and always say the question. That was Sri Bhadra and Sri Lakshmana.
From
hearing from Narada. From hearing about. What did she hear from Narada? Krishna's
parents
and activities. So, of course, that hearing has to be of a certain quality. But she was hearing from Narada, and that way her mind became fixed. Okay, now we're going to go through this story. This is a very exciting story. Krishna is a great fighter, and he's also a very romantic hero. Just like people out in the world, they're spending so much time and energy and money to hear about some great hero or some great romance. Doesn't everybody do that? Pretty much. Whether it's actual people or fictional characters. They're buying so many books and going to so many movies that the great hero comes and defeats all the opposition, defeats all the bad guys, and romantically grabs the really qualified girl. Isn't that what most... Is that correct? Okay. So, Krishna is the supreme hero. And we're going to be now. So do you think just like Sri Lakshmana, how did she become attached to Krishna again? Hearing about Krishna?
Hearing
and activity. So we're now about to hear about one of Krishna's activities in some depth. So by doing that, you can also become attached to Krishna. Like Sri Lakshmana. Srivastava said, "O Queen, I repeatedly heard Narada Muni glorify the appearances and activities of Achyuta, and thus my heart also became attached to that Lord Vakunta. Indeed, even God is Padmavasana, chosen as your husband, after careful consideration, rejecting the great demigods to rule various planets." My father, Vrittasena, was my nature compassionate to his daughter, and knowing how I felt, O thankful lady, he arranged to fulfill my desires. 19. Just as a fish was used as a target in your time for our ceremony, O Queen, to assure that you would obtain our unit as your husband, so a fish was also used in my ceremony. In my case, however, it was concealed at all times, and only its reflection could be seen in a pot of water below. Arjuna is famous as the most expert bowman. Why then could he not hit the fish target at Srimati Lakshmana's swine hara ceremony, just as he had done once before, to his Draupadi? Srila Srinivasaswami explained, "The target at Draupadi's swine hara has been covered only partially, so that a marksman can see it if he looks straight up the pillar on which it was placed. To shoot Lakshmana's target, however, it was necessary to aim by looking up and down at the same time. An impossible feat for any mortal. Therefore, only Lord Krishna could strike." Hearing of this, thousands of kings, expert in shooting arrows and wielding other weapons, converged in all directions from my father's city, accompanied by my military teachers. So was the feat impossible for them? Because what did he have to do?
Look
up and down at the same time. So although it was impossible, still thousands of them came to see the security mentality. Right? Something only God can do, and thousands of kings, but why has to do it? Text 21. And then we'll find out why. And this verse and the first verse we read are going to be the key to understanding how we can see God. My father properly honored each king according to his strength and seniority. Then, those whose minds were fixed on me, who's talking here? Who's talking? Lakshmana. The sensitive is Madhya. Whose minds were fixed on me. Those whose minds were fixed on me took up the bow and arrow and one by one tried to pierce the target in the midst of the assembly. Purport, according to the Acharyas, only those kings who were extremely intent on winning the hand of the princess even dare try to shoot the target. So where is Lakshmana's consciousness? And Krishna. Where are the consciousness of some of these kings? Some of them picked up the bow, but could not string it. So they threw it aside in frustration. Some managed to pull the bowstring toward the tip of the bow. Only they have the bowstring back and not the tip back. There goes my call. That represents the king. So. A few years, namely, Charisma, Shishka, the Duryodhana, Karna, and the king of Ambasa succeeded in stringing the bow. But none of them could find the target. These kings were very strong physically, but they were not skillful enough to find the target. Then Arjuna looked at the reflection of the fish in the water and changed its position. When he carefully shot an arrow at it, however, he did not pierce the target, but merely grazed it. According to the explanation of Srila Sridhar Swami, Arjuna was more expert and more cool than the other kings, but his physical strength was not adequate for the task of shooting it with perfect accuracy. So you have some kings who were strong but not skilled enough, and Arjuna is skilled but not strong enough. Others also being known to fight between Duryodhana and Bhima at the end of the battle of Kurukshetra. Balaram comes and he says that Bhima is stronger and Duryodhana is more skillful, so they're equally matched. 25:26. After all the arrogant kings, one of these, of course, is Arjuna, who's joking, that's and he's classified in one of them. After all the arrogant kings have given up their pride broken, the Supreme Personality of Godhead picks up the ball, easily shrunk it. And we did that also yesterday, effortlessly controlled the seven rules just like, do you remember? Just like what? As if they were what? No, that's a good guess. That's a good way to go. It says you're just like the baby goats, just like little kids. The Supreme Personality of Godhead picked up the bow, deeply strung it. Now, sometimes when Krishna does things, those fighting things, does it look like he's working hard? Yeah, sometimes. I mean, it's not matter for, you know, goes on for a while, and you can drop the weapon, and the other, you can get the ray for a while, and all that kind of stuff. Sometimes it's this protracted thing where Krishna's really getting into it. I mean, he fought with a younger man for how many days? 27. And sometimes when Krishna does these great heroic deeds of strength, he just does them immediately without any external show of effort. So he does this effortlessly and then fixes his arrow upon it. And the sun stood in the constellation named Abhijit. He looked at the fish in the water only once. So he strings go effortlessly, the sun in Abhijit, which is at noon. He looks in the water, lands in the water, and then pierces with the arrow, knocking it to the ground. So forth. Each day the sun passes through the lunar constellation Abhijit, marking the period most auspicious for a victory, as pointed out by Sri Aurobindo Chakravarti. On this particular day, Muhurta of Abhijit coincides with high noon, further emphasizing Lord Krishna's greatness by making the target all the more difficult. So all the kings have had their pride broken, some of them were knocked back by the bow, they're sitting there, Krishna takes the bow, he strings it effortlessly, glances at the target, raises his bow, the sun's at high noon in the constellation of victory, you can't even see anything because it's glaring. You ever had the sun glaring in your eye, you can't see anything? And just, and it falls. What do you think everybody says?
Wow.
Jai! You say, Jai, Jai. Right? Jai Shabda. Jai Shabda Yudhaguri. Divi. Divi Dun Dun Bayan Yur. Jai Shabda Yudhaguri. So the Divi, the vapors of the sky. And on the moon, on the earth, in the sky, in the earth, there were drums and shouts of Jai! Jai! Kettle drums blew down into the sky, and on the earth people shouted, Jai! Jai! Overjoyed! Every God showered flowers, they're all so happy! And they're showering flowers and saying, Jai! Now, this is, you have to remember that the prototypes for all men and women exist spiritually. So now Lashana is going to act like a very likely the ultimate female. And the sky, she's probably a very young girl, probably around 13, 14 years old, maybe 15 years old. And she's had her heart absorbed in Krishna. And now just imagine this anxiety, the tension that she's been feeling. Suppose somebody else lifts her hand, right? She's seeing all these kings come up, and a lot of the kings string the bow, and they get almost there, and they fall back. Or, you know, Arjuna almost made it. Now, finally, Krishna's victorious. Just then, I walked under the ceremonial ground, the ankle bells on my feet gently tinkling. I was wearing a new garment and a finest silk, tied with belt, flash of gold and joy. This is a shining smile on my face, and a wreath of flowers in my hair. Purple. She was sure of her mistakes, and she laughed and was so excited. By remembering how she changed the few more, did she forgot her natural shyness and went on to describe her own troubles? I lifted my face, which was encircled by abundant warmth and effulgence, and the glow of my earrings reflected in my cheeks. Smiling coolly, I glanced about, and looking around at all who came, let me try to get a good intent. Slowly placed the necklace on the shoulder of Mirari, who had captured my heart. So here we have Anurakta Hridaya. It captured her heart. Just then, so just at that moment, right, from the beautiful young Lakshmana, she's walking, her ankle bones are tinkling, she's smiling, she's flowers, her hair. She has this beautiful necklace made of gold and jewels. And as she puts it on, right? Yes, then! There were loud sounds of concho! Mm-hmm. I remember. Pataha, Bibi, and Anahidram, as well as other instruments, men and women began to dance, and singers began to sing. So wouldn't that be a nice festival? She says that she's putting the necklace on Murari. The drums are beating, the conchos are blowing, the male dancers are dancing, the female dancers are dancing, and everybody is singing. Oh, somebody's not happy. Who isn't happy? Yeah. So the madhya, the people whose minds and hearts are not on Krishna, what we're on? Lakshmana. The leading there could not tolerate my having chosen the Supreme Personality of Godhead over the Dravidi. Burning with lust, they became quarrelsome. Purple. She was sure of Swami comments that the contamination of lust led the kings to quarrel foolishly with the Lord, even after seeing his supreme power. By the way, the name of Draupadi here is Yajnasena. Anybody know why Draupadi is called Yajnasena? Born from the sacrificial fire. Yeah. This was a very unusual Ramadan samskar ceremony. Draupadi. I mean, it was started out, it was pretty typical, where Kunjupa wanted to have one of his sons who would kill Jonathan. And so he engaged a priest, that's the whole story, who would be the priest. The first priest he asked said, you know, I'm not doing that, that's nasty, to try to get a son that's going to kill the Brahmin Jonathan. And then finally he said, you ask my brother. He said, my brother doesn't have much discrimination as to what's good and bad. So he asked the brother. His brother was doing this yoga, and it has to, from the yoga, there comes some special food that when the queen eats them later on, she can conceive children by her husband. So, you know, in the modern day, they give people chemicals and drugs and like that. Most days it's like a mango or it was sweet rice or something. So the priest is doing the yoga, and the queen has to go bathe. So she left the yoga, and she had to go take her bath. So she's taking her bath, and the priest says, now is the time. The wife has to take the payasa. And she said, my wife's not here yet. Please wait. Please wait. And he says, I can't wait. It has to happen now in the sacrifice. No, please wait. My wife is just coming. I can't wait. And he takes the payasa and throws it in the fire. Out comes Sister Jumna. The warrior who was the dead drama child. And then, to everyone's surprise, out comes the lady, Draupadi. And a voice from the sky said, this woman is born to kill many a Kshatriya. So that's what it's here to say. Which is easy to hear this. Alright, well, here we have Lakshmana And her heart is always absorbed in Krishna because of Shushva. She Shushva. What is she? Shushva Narada-san. Narada-san. She has heard Narada's songs describing the Shushas, Janda, and Karma. And then we have the king who, instead of being absorbed in Krishna, Mandiya, they're absorbed in Lakshmana. They're absorbed in Lakshmana. Now this is like Ravana, right? Ravana wanted to take Sita away for his own enjoyment. Now there are great devotees who are very absorbed in Srimati Radharani as a maid servant. But they're not trying to take Radharani away from Krishna, they're trying to bring Radharani to Krishna. Right? Sita Devi has her maid servants, they're trying to unite her with her. Hanuman is serving Sita, he's absorbed also with Sita, but he wants to bring Sita. Whereas these kings, they wanted to take Lakshmana away from Krishna. And therefore, Krishna is in front of them, and Lakshmana is garlanding him, and Lakshmana is so excited that she's even describing how beautiful she is. Right?
She's just... I have to remember she's a young girl, but she's
very overwhelmed with excitement. And these kings, although they're seeing Krishna, and they're seeing how wonderful Krishna is, their mood is to fight with him.
Their mood is to fight with him. So, the question comes very often.
We were saying in the beginning that one should worship Krishna with faith. That Lakshmana wasn't, her attachment to Krishna wasn't sentimental. It was based on due consideration. But people ask, well, just got this question recently from one person who's left the movement but still kind of can't stop from hanging around. That I did service for 10 years and I didn't see God. You know, this is my job was just sounds and deities were just statues and I didn't see God. I wanted to see God. And just the other day also, somebody said to me, you know, if Krishna just gave me the taste, then I could give up all my sense gratification. Why doesn't he do that? Why do I have to struggle? Why doesn't Krishna just come before me and show me himself? And if I saw how beautiful he was, if I could realize Krishna is in his name, then of course I'd give up all of my material attachments. Now this is very interesting. Is Krishna before you in front of his name? Yeah. Is he standing right there?
Yeah.
Did he just do something pretty amazing? Did he do something that no ordinary human being could do? What did he do? He shot the fish.
The sun was shining,
looking up and down. He had to look up and down at the same time while the sun was shining on it. Now, someone might say, well, anybody could do that. How do we know that not anybody could do that? Because nobody could do it. And these were the top people on the planet. I mean, these weren't just like a bunch of, you know, modern day Mr. Universe. You know, or some stuntman on the movie who just has a special effect. These were the real guys. I mean, these guys were as strong as 10,000 elephants. They really were as strong as 10,000 elephants. There was one man about 100 years ago from the Guinness Book of World Records that was stronger than 4 giraffe horses. I don't know what you call them. Clydesdales, I think. Is that what you call them? They have like those hairy feet. See those huge horses? And he had his hands folded like this. 2 horses strapped to this arm, 2 horses strapped to this arm, and we were beating them, and he didn't budge a centimeter. So he was stronger than 4 draft horses. He could also push a train engine uphill and all kinds of things. But these guys were stronger than not just 4 or 5 horses. They were stronger than 10,000 elephants. And we have Arjuna, right, who had all these divine weapons. He single-handedly practically could hold off a whole crew of army. Right? So these people couldn't do it. They couldn't do it. Both of them weren't even strong enough to string the bow. A few of them could string the bow, but then they couldn't find the target, and even Arjuna wasn't able to make the target fall. So Krishna's just proved. He's taken all the most competent people in the world, and he's proved that he can do something that no one else can. He's shown his glory as God. So they all surrendered, right? They all felt ecstasy, right? And they gave up all their material taxes. Is that true? Sometimes people ask, you know, how could I have left the spiritual world if Krishna right in front of me? If Krishna's right in front of me. And here he's marrying Lakshmana. What a joyous occasion. Wouldn't that be wonderful? Wouldn't you like to have that wedding take place here in the temple? Can you imagine that? For the Sunday feast? Festival for the Sunday feast. The marriage of Virgadish and Lakshmana. Right? We have the bow, we have the target set up. Krishna walks off the altar. Walks down to the moon. Room, and there's Lakshmana waiting, breath of sleep. He's on the roll, his hands are there, he shoots the fish. Then we would all get to say, Jai Jai, Jai Flower, play them again. Actually, someone who's very attached to Krishna will see these pastimes taking place within their heart. Now, whatever pastime that they want to see. But we see here that seeing Krishna, these kings who wanted to maintain their attachment to enjoying Lakshmana, their love prevented them from seeing Krishna. It acted like as a filter, so that they couldn't perceive Krishna directly. They saw Krishna as their enemy. Their mood was, we want to exploit Lakshmana, of course, his Krishna's Shakti. They wanted to exploit Krishna's Shakti for their own selves. Therefore, they could not surrender to, or love, or feel affection for, or feel happiness at the victory of the Shaktiman. Therefore, one has to pass through the stage of Anarthana Vritti. One has to be free, not to pray to Obhavishu, Nityam Bhagavad Sevaya, Bhagavad Dishma Shoki, Bhakti Bhakti Nishiki. One must have most of these anarthas, like love, greed, envy, removed from the heart before one can see Krishna. Now, of course, Krishna reveals himself a little bit, even to the beginners who are covered with an artist. He is responds, right? He is the one for Bhagavad Gita. We have a little desire to see him with love. He responds to us a little bit. Of course, he responds to us actually, not exactly proportionately, but he responds to us probably 10 times more than we're responding to him. And just the beginner who just comes and, oh, I'm going to try this chanting Hare Krishna, what's it about? They're experiencing something in the kirtan that cannot be explained just by the nice musical arrangements. They're experiencing something of Krishna, or someone taking a little prasad. They're experiencing a taste, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, which cannot be explained by the material ingredients. So Krishna is exhibiting himself in a very small degree to the beginner, responding to their surrender. But for Krishna to fully reveal himself, one has to have no anarthas. Now, this is reasonable, isn't it? If somebody wants to take your money, are you going to be their good friend? Of course not. If somebody comes in your house and you see that while they're in your house, they're looking at all your possessions. And they're drawing on something. What is that you're drawing? Oh, it's a map of your house, so I can come in at night and steal your things. Are you going to throw that in your house, aren't you? You're not going to say, oh, you're my distant friend, I'm going to really open my heart to you. And right? Who's going to do that? So this is Lakshmi Devi. This is Krishna's great opulence, Shri. And the demons want to take her for their own enjoyment. And she's a person. Also, we would let someone who wants to come to your house and kidnap your sister or your daughter or your wife. No, you're going to protect your dependents. So Krishna is not going to reveal himself to somebody who has this demoniac mentality. For sometimes the devotees of the Lord, Prabhupada says, are more merciful than the Lord. There's a story of our godfather Haridash in Mumbai. Do any of you know Haridash? Anybody know Haridash? Works with films in Mumbai? So I'm going to try to tell the whole story probably. So he was a street boy, orphan, never knew his parents were. One of those ragamuffins you see on the streets in India, baby, and you know that when they get an opportunity, they will also steal. Yeah. They're living on the street. They have no education, they have no home, they have no training. So there was one such little boy, and he grew up stealing. And he gets put in prison over and over again, and as soon as he would get out again, he'd steal. And so one time in prison, he found the back of Godhead magazine. And on the back is a picture of Prabhupada. And he says, look at the picture, you notice that Prabhupada is wearing a very expensive watch. And he thinks, when I get out, I'm going to find this man and steal his watch. So when he got out of prison, he went to the temple, the Jew, which was just beginning. At that time, the devotees were living just in a shack with rats, and it was a really difficult situation. Just when, you know, they were undergoing their legal battle. But he said, for him, the only time in his life he had a roof over his head. So for him, he considered it very, very opulent living, and he got a couple meals a day. Prabhupada wasn't there at the time. Of course, he didn't tell them why he was there. He just said, I come, and he thought they're giving me a place to live, and they're giving me food to eat, so he would do some service, naturally. And after a couple of days, the Shaka gave him some meat and taught him how to chant, and he started chanting. So I've got to do this in order to live here, and get some food, and wait to get my watch, no problem, you know. So he's there doing the service, and he's chanting, and they used to send him out on the boat run, and when he'd go out on the boat run, he'd also steal some of the fruit. He said it took him 2 years to give up his stealing habit completely. He was so habituated. So, after staying in the temple and doing some service for a long time, that Prabhupada came to a temple nearby. And so, as a devotee asked, so present, I want to go see Prabhupada. I want to go see Prabhupada. He said, all right, you have to promise you're going to come back. So, gave him the train fare, went to see Prabhupada. Offered obeisances. And the Prabhupada said, why have you come here? And he said, well, Prabhupada, actually, by that time, he's become a little purified. He said, Prabhupada, actually, I gave you to steal your watch. And Prabhupada took off his watch, and he handed it to him. And he was pushed to take it. So the devotees of the Lord, maybe someday I'll tell you how he got into it. The devotees of the Lord are more merciful than the Lord. Prabhupada also said in Detroit, he got a building that was covered in 24 karat gold. Incredible building. And also some of the local street kids would come in, and we knew they were looking for things to steal. Prabhupada said, that's why they steal things as long as they're coming to chant to take a shot. So the devotees of the Lord are more merciful than the Lord. But the Lord, he's not going to let somebody exploit his devotees, he's not going to let somebody exploit his enemies, he's not going to let somebody exploit him. So to them he remains Abhijanandi Mamuta, Manasin Sanamashitam, Paramabhava, Ajananta, Mamabhutam, Manisham, Ajananta. They don't know me. They don't know me, he says. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that a devotee may say, oh, I'm not committing any of the offenses. Just like in most Islam temples, every day we recite the 10 offenses. Whenever Prabhupada would initiate devotees, he would almost always talk about the 10 offenses on chanting. And they say, well, I'm not committing any of those offenses. But Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that the truth is in one's face. Like it says in the Bhagavatam, that if one's heart doesn't melt in ecstasy upon hearing the Lord's holy name, certainly one's heart is feel for me. Someone asked last night, how do we know we're chanting good quality? And Prabhupada was asked that. He said, you just have your beads, you can count whether or not you're chanting the proper number. They said, no, Prabhupada's quality. He said, quality? Said that is in 16 rounds, isn't enough when you want to chant 16,000 rounds. So being Christian is dependent on developing that quality. Just like I was very, very fortunate to meet one devotee, not at all a known person. Nobody, I'm sure, that any of you know, just doing some simple, humble service in a temple somewhere. And this devotee was telling me, oh, I heard my Guru Maharaj saying that when we are inattentive in our chanting, it is like beating Krishna. Just like taking Krishna and beating him. Just like you try to talk to someone and they're not listening to you. They're texting on their phone and, you know, so many things. Hey, you feel offended, don't you? And the devotee said, so I was meditating, I was sitting down to chant, and I was thinking, Krishna, Krishna, I don't want to beat you anymore. I just don't want to beat you anymore. I was chanting, Krishna, I really want to be kind to you. And the devotee said, then Krishna, And Krishna was there. And Sivarti was describing how it looked like when Krishna comes back in the afternoon, covered with dust and sweating, and the sweat, and Sivarti told me, was like little pearls decorating Krishna. And Krishna was sitting there. Sivarti said, for the rest of Java, he was sitting there next to me, and as I was reading the Vedas, he's also standing there. And I went to my Guru Maharaj, says, what am I doing now? Somebody told me, my back of their leg, and just couldn't stop chanting, and just chanting, and just chanting, and just chanting. All day, all night, 178 rounds. I was speaking to another devotee recently, who was telling me also, you know, I just decided on the Kadasi, I was just going to chant, and I just kept chanting, and chanting, and chanting. Until I got to 128 rounds, and I just kept chanting until like 3 in the morning, and then I thought, okay, maybe I'll sleep a little. And when I was going to say, you know, as soon as I just chant Ram, I can hardly contain my happiness. I just pop. So this is Rupa Goswami saying, how much nectar is in these two syllables, Krishna? Well, that's a wonderful, this is a very wonderful. Was saying, how I do 5 things when I chant, this is what he said. I was asking the boy, so what are those 5 things? He said, I'll tell you sometime, maybe when you're done. So then I saw the boy, what is it? Someone told me a few things. And finally I said, I'm fixing on that my identity is Krishna's servant. I am putting my whole consciousness into hearing, and then I let the holy name leave the pastimes of the Lord in my heart. So it is one who is approaching Krishna with that consciousness where Krishna reveals himself. That Krishna, I want to see. This consciousness that Lakshmana is talking about, where she's holding Krishna in her heart. And where the kings who are holding Lakshmana in their heart, they don't see Krishna. They think he's an ordinary person who's in the way of their sense gratification. That's how they're seeing Krishna. That's very interesting. If you look at the 17th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna is describing sacrifice, charity, austerity, the modes of nature. If any of you know this, what is the difference between sacrifice, charity, and austerity in the mode of goodness and passion? What is the demarcation between goodness and passion?
Passion, it's motivated by some attachments of fruit.
It's the motivation. So between goodness and passion, the activities are identical. For sacrifice, charity, and austerity, which Krishna says in the 18th chapter, everyone should do, even the great goal. The activities are identical. No difference. Now, in ignorance, the activities are different. In ignorance, you're giving to an unworthy person, disrespectfully, here's your charity. Now, at the wrong time, you're giving the charity at the shower time, or when they're in the toilet room. You're giving it to an unworthy person. You're doing a terrible sacrifice. Like you were just talking about in Brisbane, how Shalva was eating a handful of dust every day to satisfy Lord Shiva. So, you know, the nature of austerity is nasty. But that's ignorance. Ignorance, not only the internal motive is nasty, but the external behavior is nasty. But between passion and goodness is very much the same. You know, people really passionate, kshatriyas, they're very righteous people. They're engaged in dharma. But the motive is different. What you speak of the transcendentalists, what is their emotion? So if we want to see Krishna, it's not just a matter of doing the externals. The kings were also there, weren't they? They were all there. Come see Krishna. They came. Narsimha was there. And these envious lusty kings were also there. So if we want to see Krishna, we have to change our consciousness. Because, you know what? Krishna is already there. His story is about Bhutanarization, it's just a dream. Krishna is already there. He's right there. The concept that he's right far away, is there any other way? He's right there. He's right here, he's in our heart. There he is dancing on the altar. I'm Dantarasa Padamana, Chantara, Sun, even every atom. Vunyalapa, Lovayu. He's the air. He's the earth pulling us down. He's the light. He's safe. He's all around us. Why don't we see him? Because he doesn't want to see us? Not exactly, because we put on blinders. We put on blinders. What are these blinders? These blinders are that we're trying to exploit him. These kinks, we're trying to exploit Krishna and his energy. When we look around at the world, do we see Krishna to love and serve, or do we see Krishna's energy for me to exploit? Everything's Krishna. Right? Krishna is this microphone. Krishna is this table. Krishna is all the elements of my own body. Krishna is the earth. Krishna is the fire. Krishna is the light. Krishna is the floor. It's all Krishna. Prayamandana Trinitivati Vilokini, the sun sets the light of the day, Shivoki. That's time. This is where I'm teaching you to answer. The devotees see Krishna everywhere. And therefore, the devotees see this is Krishna. This is Krishna's energy. Want to take that energy of Krishna and have her garden with the Lord and say jai. The devotee wants to act like we'll see tomorrow how Lakshmi's father is acting as the perfect devotee, trying to bring Krishna together with his energy and great readiness of pomp and love. But the materialistic person wants to take Krishna's energy, see that it's separate from Krishna, and exploit it. So we are actually trying to exploit Krishna. And even as a religious person, we may be trying to exploit Krishna. Ramakrishna thought people using the deity to get donations or for name and fame or for a place to sleep or to be part of the spiritual community or whatever. That if that mood is still there to exploit Krishna, why should Krishna be used? So how do we develop this attachment to Krishna? How do we change our consciousness so that Krishna will want to reveal? He'll take away this curtain, as he says in the Gita Yogamaya, or the devotee say, they shall punish us, please remove it, he told him. How do we do that? What does Ashura tell us? What is the way to do that? How do we do
that? Hearing of Krishna's.
Hearing of Krishna's. And the hearing also has to be of a certain quality. The hearing should be with rapt attention. Like Prabhupada would say, when he's talking to him and other things, like this, he'd say, don't divert your attention. The hearing should be with rapt attention. And just like if you're driving somewhere and you need to get direction, do you pay attention? If you're lost, are we lost? So we find Krishna, we see Krishna, we're chanting Krishna's names, we're singing Krishna's song, we're eating Krishna's garments, we're surrounded by Krishna, Krishna's in our heart. If we don't see him, then we're lost. So if you're lost, and you're running out of petrol, are we running out of petrol? The flight taking away, he took that photo of me and I couldn't bear to see it. It was like a grandmother. I got a clock ticking. Of course, those of you who are 20 may not feel like it's clock ticking. But you know, the petrol gauge is going to run out. You don't know when you're going to have to get a new car. And even if you're fortunate, just like you've had a fortunate birth, was that then it was all easy?
Sorry.
Was your birth all easy to become Krishna conscious? Just because you had a fortune?
No.
Right? So we're lost in the storm, like we have this rain. We can't see our way, we don't know where to go. Someone gives us direction, someone who knows, are we going to pay attention or are we going to be distracted? Pay very close attention. So why not just say, give very rapt attention? And of course, Prabhupada says that one gives rapt attention if one's pure in mind. And when pure in mind is one's pure in action, and one's pure in action is one's pure in eating, sleeping, fearing, and meeting. So we have a pure life and we focus more and more on hearing with rapt attention. And as we hear with rapt attention, what will happen? What happened to Lakshmana when she heard with rapt attention?
Surrender.
She surrendered. And what happened? We have the word also, Chitta. She gave her heart to Krishna. And then not only could she see Krishna and appreciate him unlike the other king, but Krishna actually came and showed this great feat of heroism and took her away as his bride. So today we can meditate on this pastime. Of course, we're going to finish it tomorrow. And actually this pastime, if Krishna is there in our heart, that means all of Krishna's leelas are also there in our heart. Must be, right? Krishna's devotees must be there. Krishna's devotees, where is Krishna? Everything's also there. And what we do sometimes are taking place here, they're taking place in our heart, but we meditate on them. Maybe Krishna will also reveal these pastimes in our heart. But at least we can go on meditating on them. If you don't show up, if you don't show up, then at least I will spend my life, Krishna, meditating and offering obeisances to these pastimes. So that, as we heard from Sri Bhagavad yesterday, gently, I will worship you. And someday, Lord, I will become purified enough so that I will actually see you. So, questions, comments? Additions, attractions? Yes, sir.
I feel about a place now where I'm being called on to let go of myself completely to serve God. There's so much fear for me in letting go of everything that I think protects me from the world. What's your experience with that stuff?
Do you chant?
Absolutely.
How long have you been chanting for?
Probably not for a couple of years.
For a couple of years? Do you have any kind of minimum that you chant?
I just chant in my heart.
Do you chant a beat at all?
No.
That would be a good next step. But the fact that you're able to say what you just said shows that whatever chanting you're doing must be done very nicely. Because this is one of the most important realizations that one needs to come to. That I need to give myself to Krishna, but I'm afraid to let go of everything I think is protecting me. If you can see that, then you're doing something that's really drawing Krishna's attention. He's definitely reciprocating with you. Very, very nice. That step in learning anything, looking at the teacher, right? So anything you want to learn, the first step is being aware that you don't know it. Being aware that there is a difference between where you are and where you want to be. The psychologists call that cognitive dissonance. It's an uncomfortable feeling, isn't it? And it's meant to be an uncomfortable feeling. It's like hunger. Now you feel that there's some difference between where I am and where I am, and you recognize that you're lost. And that feeling of discomfort is meant to push us to take the next step. Now what some people do when they get that feeling, they just stop their spiritual activities. For Mr. Rupa said when he first started chanting Hare Krishna, that all of a sudden he lost his taste for material life, and so he stopped chanting. He said, this is a really powerful thing, I'm every rest, I don't think I better leave it alone. So, all sorts of things, he started out with it. And so sometimes people, when they see that, the fear because they didn't know I won't go on. And we see that even people, once they become members of the Hare Krishna movement, when these things become obvious to them, sometimes they give up their chanting, or they become ritualistic. They just become mechanical. I just need this one. Okay, I see that. You know, so then, So that's a way of, if you do that, then you lose awareness of this fact that, wait a minute, I've got to surrender. One, I've got to surrender. And two, I'm attached. And I'm afraid. So the next step is make a little step of surrender. Or if you can make a big step, that's not bad. But if all you can do is a little step, that's okay. Little steps are fine. Do a little surrender. What Krishna's showing, Krishna's obviously showing you something in your heart of some next step you have to take. Does Krishna do this with all of us? Unless you're chanting, it's abysmal. Krishna's showing us in our heart. And Krishna's not showing you anything in your heart which you need to do, that you really need to work on your relationship with him. But he's showing us in our heart what we need to do. So, close your eyes and jump. Try it. You can always go back to being with you. It's not really true. You tell me. You can sort of kind of go back to being with you. Not completely. But that's already done. You've already ruined that. We'll never be working with you again. That's too late. But you know, you can't externally go back to some of your attention. Sure. I don't know how many of you have children, but there's a little game you play with little children. They're about 1.5 years old, where you sit them up on a high place,
and you go like this, and they jump into your hand. And they love that game. You throw them in the air, catch them. Maybe remember your parents did that kind of thing with you? I don't know if you know this, because we were really, really little. And maybe one or so. And the children love it. You know, you put them up there, you catch them, they go, "Game, game, game!" You know, you put them up there and catch them. And there's this much time where you're flying in the air. That's the whole point of it. If they just went up there and you held them up there, that's no fun. They jump. This much. I was reading a story of this one little puppy dog that got separated from its master. And it ended up on a bridge. They were in a park, and the puppy dog was up on a bridge, and it saw its master at the bottom of the bridge. And it got so excited, it jumped from the bridge into the water. "Ha, where's my master? Let me jump." So my suggestion is that when Krishna gives you indications of what is your next step in surrender, look at your fears very, very carefully. Look them straight in the eye and say, "If that happens, if those things I'm afraid of, really look at your fears. What are they? Don't let them remain these like shadowy demons. You know, what is my fear? That I'll never get married, and I'm old, nobody can care, or I won't make any money. You won't have food. Or you won't in the world will like me anymore. I won't have any fun." But look at it. Look at it carefully. And say, let's say that happens. Let's say that thing that I'm afraid of happens. But I saw Krishna personally 24 hours ago. I was filled with ecstatic love for him. I was absorbed in my service as a soul. I was seeing the spiritual world in my heart 24 hours a day. I was able to see myself doing my eternal service for Krishna. I had no more interest or attachment or practice, even awareness of this world. So if I had that, along with the thing that I'm afraid of, would that be okay? And if your answer is yes, then close your eyes. And what will happen is, first of all, Krishna will catch you. But you've got to close your eyes and jump. He's not going to catch you first. You close your eyes and jump, he will catch you. And you'll see, first of all, most likely, all those things you're afraid of will not happen. Most likely. Yeah. You've got to be prepared for them to happen, otherwise it doesn't work. You can't play games with Krishna. You can't say, you know, "Well, I'll surrender only if you do this, and this, and this." He says, "Hey, what kind of surrender is that? No deal." Yeah, so, and we're going to give up everything anyway, just by the way. So, you know, when you prepare for that, most likely those things won't happen. Most likely they won't happen. And Krishna will catch you. And you'll gain in freedom, you'll feel free. With each anarcha that we let go of, you feel free. You feel like, as the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says in the Shikshastra, it's like a bath for the self. Haven't we felt it? Have we let go of an artist before? And how did we feel? Wasn't it a good feeling? It was a good feeling, wasn't it? You know, those of us who came from the outside world, if those of us who took the Sakasins, we decided to give them up, or those of us who were having a success and decided to give that up. Didn't that feel good? Like, whoa! Freedom! And you think, why did I wait so long to do this? So one will feel free, one will feel happy, one will feel Krishna's protection, and one will see that all terrible things don't happen anyway, and that even if they do, it doesn't matter anymore. It's so important. So this happens and that happens. It doesn't matter anymore. And that way you get the faith. And then Krishna shows you the next thing. Respond. Look at it. Look at it right in the face. "Oh, I have a problem with whatever. With love. With attachment. With pride. With this. Oh, yeah. Hence. Why am I holding on to it? Because I have these fears. Look at them. Gyan and Dhyan and Bhaskara. Krishna wants you to look. Look at them. Oh. Okay. Suppose those fears happen. But I have Krishna. Would that be okay? And if your answer is no, then you're stuck. You know? You stay in Arjuna Vritti for a long time, and it's a hard struggle with determination. And then you say, how come I'm not enthused all the time? Hare Krishna. You know? And there's nothing to do with you. So then you're trying to help other people, and they'll tell you, I have this thing, and I'm afraid, and you try to help them, and you see they get a little glimmer of light for a minute, and you're supposed to go, right? Okay, suffer for a while. No. Hare Krishna. Look at the fear. Say, if it's okay, then say, hey, Krishna. Take it. Take the attention. Go ahead, take it. You can't do it honestly. You can't do it dishonestly. If you do it dishonestly, you'll be very sorry. You'll be very dishonestly. Krishna, take it. You take it. You go, whoa. That feels great. Oh, thank you, Krishna. Okay? And then you'll be able to go on and on. As you do that more and more and more, your faith will deepen and deepen and deepen and deepen. And you'll start out from saying, whoa, I'm going to surrender like that. Oh, hey, Krishna, what's next? Surrender. What a narka are we getting rid of today, Lord? Let's go! Why? Because you start to see your destination. Okay? Is that alright? Okay? So take this little step. Take a little step. Honestly, don't do it dishonestly. Do it dishonestly, it's catastrophe. You're like, okay, I'm going to hold on to all my fear, and I have all my conditions. Okay, I should take my darkness. Woo! Don't do that. That will just be painful. Yes?
I think it's when people start coming along in Krishna consciousness. And it's often really that they're just kind of quite in the light of the desire to let be a hurry. Like there's probably like something wasn't the right ability in front of them, or better life. And sometimes you feel that actually feel not the desire to be sort of hurry and actually step back again.
Mm-hmm.
How would you approach it? Would you kind of confront them as you just said, or would you do this?
You can do that well. Maybe twice. The people who don't do that at all reach the state of Nishtha very fast. Rama Bhutti Pratanatman Soshti and Kansati Samatha Vesha Dishishi Matha Dhin Matha Dekura. If we're not at that platform, then we're doing the same thing. Now, at what point the person does? Sometimes the person gets stuck at one another for a long time. We all know people like that. You know, they've got this one big anartha that everybody else can see. It's like a big road on their part, and everybody else can see it's there. It's like, well, this person really has a problem with pride, or this person really has a problem with love, isn't it? Right? And everybody can see it, but they don't want to see it. And if you even hint at it, they practice the choice. If they say, well, what do I need to do to advance? You might look. You know, have you ever looked in the mirror? Do you see the most funny thing on your forehead? Yeah, I mean, it's not very noticeable, but you might consider going for surgery. They give you anesthesia, okay? What are you doing with me now? And most of us have our guard jaws and our electric fences around our really, really fatty markers. These are the ones that we've been grooming and feeding and worshiping for a long, long, long time. So now, at what point that person, you know, whoa, I don't know if I want to chant on peace. You know, I don't know if I want to make that commitment. Or one person is like, well, I have to give up my friends? And I'm thinking, boy, that was that a long time ago. I mean, for me, the question of, do I want to give up a materialistic friend? Big deal. But to the person at that point, it's a catastrophe. Their whole life can fail. They won't have any friends anymore. Nobody will love them. They'll not love all these fears. Now, I've got that with my stuff, you know. And as you go on, the demons get more and more subtle, and they look more and more and more like bhakti. As Rupa Goswami says, the weeds look more and more like bhakti. And then it becomes like, but that's my service. That's how the devotee tell me that. And the devotee got involved in some very sinful activities. So I had to ask Krishna, what's the problem? So the devotee came back and said, my problem is I'm attached to this and this and this. And I said, I thought that was the problem. The devotee said, but that's my service. I said, I'm sure. What's your motive? What's your motive? Actually, the devotee Guru Maharaj was telling the devotee to change their external service and they were resisting. I said, what's your motive? So, you know, one way you can help other people is to deal with your own stuff. Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati says, there is no person can act as a reformer of another person. And no one should even try to act as a reformer of another person, because no one is without the highest guidance. Rather, a person should try to be the reformer of themselves with a heart calling me. Oh, like the devotees at Brisbane, they have that thing from Gandhi, be the change. Basically, Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati is saying the same thing, be the change you want to see in the world. You exemplify that change. Or as Jesus said, how can you take out the speck from your brother's eye when you have a log in your own eye and give it to Krishna? First take the log out of your own eye, then you can see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. So are we dealing with our own stuff? You know, okay, that person's afraid to give up their materialistic plans, or that person's afraid to chain on beads, or that person's afraid to be a vegetarian, or that person's afraid to, you know, whatever, put on neckies. And those of us who've been past that stage a long time ago, you see how silly that is. But what are we, where are our feelings? And how am I dealing with that? And if we're not dealing like that, then we'll go to these other people and go, oh, you should just surrender, you fool. This is kind of like the board game. And that's not very effective. So deal with our own feelings. Be enthusiastic to deal with our nurses. Take it as an adventure. Deal with our fear. This is fun. Hey, you shot the target, you know? You can do it. They'll take care of us. We're going to see how they'll take care of us. We ourselves need to develop that faith, and then really we help others by praying Christians in the heart, being their well-wishers. Say something, see how a person responds. If they respond, you can go. If they don't respond, that's one of the intentions of the name, trying to preach above a person's receptivity as a product. Let's see how receptive is. If they're receptive, you can go. If they're not, actually, you're doing really well. I think what you're doing is really nice. And you just go on and do that. You're very nice to meet you and meet them. Okay? Yeah?
What if it's about Pujamasa? Like, I think you just have a case there of Pujamasa already giving them an instruction. And we try to push forward with that. And
if your spiritual master gives you an instruction?
No, that's a particular person. Like, if all of the master is looking after the contact, which is still coming along, and he's giving them a particular instruction.
Okay.
And we try to push forward with this instruction. How far can we go because of our
recording? You can go as far as the person is receptive. Otherwise, you risk A, offending the name, B, violating the austerities of speech according to the mode of goodness. You speak has to benefit people. If it's not benefiting them, if it's harming them, it may be truthful, but if it's harming them, it's not in the mode of your austerity, it's not in the mode of goodness. Then what's motivating you is generally pride. That means you've got your own law. How are you going to help a person with their spec when you have your own law? Now, I mean, I say this, you know, I've done it, believe me. You know, try to push somebody to do something that they're not ready to use the word push. That's a very interesting word, push. So one has to be very careful. Now, in order for people to be receptive, they have to feel what towards you?
Trust.
You can't force a relationship of trust. Can you? And trust, we'll talk about this on Saturday morning as far as raising children, but trust is not done by positional relationships. So the fact that you are a senior doesn't mean that someone's going to trust you. That could be with title. Doesn't mean someone's going to trust you. And it doesn't work. You can't assume because I'm older, you know, or I'm senior, or I have a title, that therefore I can assume receptivity on the other person's part, and I can push and damage them. Now I'm going to be culpable. And that will be a block in my own spiritual life. So one of my former students said to me that there's two elements in trust. One is that the other person knows what they're talking about, that they have some expertise, and the other is that they are well-wishers. So first you better make sure you have the expertise, which means you don't just know theoretically, you have to have some realization, which means you've got to be dealing with your own demons. Okay? If you're not dealing with your own demons, you don't have a realization to help anybody deal with theirs. And the other thing is, you have to really care about that person. You can't be helping them and feathering your cap. Oh, you know, the people I help. You know, we used to have the score sheet for the BACTA program. You know, how many seekers, how many sorry? So it shouldn't be like that. Like, that's like the Muslims, you know, they want to go around, how many heads did I chop off? So we don't want to bring credit to get people that way. It's not taking any off the move. Okay. So if we genuinely care about someone, then we're going to take them just as far as they're willing to go and they're willing to go. Now, of course, we always have some subterfuge, we always have persona. Okay. We do have some secret weapons, we have persona, you know, the garlands of the deities and so many things. But really caring about someone else means not only looking for their ultimate welfare, but trying to act in such a way that they'll achieve it and that they'll stay for the long haul. If you push somebody too far too fast, they'll probably just fall out of the sky like a meteor. And how many times have we done this to people? Okay? On the other hand, if someone is capable of going for it, then yeah, don't hold back. So don't hold back, people. We want to go for it, and don't push people too hard who aren't ready for it. You know, it's like picking a fruit before it's ripe. Somebody gave me some of those kind of fruits yesterday. Here's an unripe avocado and an unripe nectarine. There's no taste. You don't want to force like that. Okay, I hope this was helpful. So you can ignore anything I said that wasn't. And thank you very much. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.
Melbourne
devotees, key, Jerry.